And you know, I think it's going to have to come from a lot of different directions. You know, I think the hard part is, you know, with this, the way we frame bodies, like by saying there's a war on obesity, I think it sets all of us up for thinking that way, that, you know, we're at war against these bodies, which is horrible. I mean, no one's at war against my body, and I don't want to think that.
You are listening to the Eating Disorders Recovery Podcast with me, Tabitha Farrar.
Hi there. Welcome to this week's podcast. This week, you'll hear the conversation that I had with Aaron Flores, who is a registered dietitian, nutritionist, and he specializes in intuitive eating and health at every size. Now, it's difficult. It's always difficult for me to summarize the beginning, what we talk about in the podcasts, because a lot of the times we go off at tangents. I like to keep the podcast's conversational style and natural, and just sort of find out what's interesting about the way a person works or what their story is or what they're doing. I think that in this podcast we focus on what Aaron's practice is, which is weight neutral approaches that focus on changing behaviors that improve health rather than focusing on weight loss. So that's what a lot of we talk about. We also talk about just sort of a tangent on treatment centers and some of the problems when people with binge eating disorders are put into the same treatment center as people with restrictive eating disorders, such as anorexia nervosa and bulimia nervosa. I get a little bit heated in that bit. It's just something I feel quite strongly about. We go through a lot of things in this podcast, but I was thrilled to talk to Aaron because it's a brilliant example of how wonderful a dietitian can be, and how if you find the right dietitian, somebody that gets eating disorders and genuinely understands and cares about the difference between, say, treating somebody with an eating disorder versus the general population, and truly also understands the degree of weight stigma that exists everywhere in medicine, healthcare, dietary, you know, everything, even your flipping dentist, I think there's weight stigma everywhere. And so in eating disorder recovery, well, we focus mostly on binge eating disorder in this podcast, because that's what we're talking about with Health at Every Size and the other things that Aaron sort of focuses on. But any sort of eating disorder, finding that dietitian that knows what they're dealing with, that understands it, is a game changer. So yeah, the first question that I asked Aaron was to tell us a little bit about himself. Here's Aaron.
My name's Aaron Flores, and I'm a registered dietitian. I'm here in a suburb of Los Angeles, California, in Calabasas, California. I have a private practice here where I work with clients with all sorts of different eating disorders, and I also work part-time at Center for Discovery in their outpatient treatment center in Woodland Hills. The short story of how I got here is a lot of winding paths have brought me here. Let's put it that way. I started out in the video game industry, hated every minute of it, and eventually got the courage to leave and went back to school to become a dietitian. What I know now is that I actually went back to be a dietitian because I had my own struggles with food and body image, and that led me into this career path. And since becoming a dietitian, I've really just evolved my practice and my career through reading intuitive eating, health at every size. And I basically practice a weight neutral approach towards helping people improve their relationship with food and their bodies.
Wow, I didn't know video game into dietitian.
I know
a shift.
Totally not related. I know it's a bizarre. It's really a 180 flip.
Actually, so something that interests me about that is that product Soylent. Because a lot of people that write video games and different other software. There's this whole sort of movement against not taking time out to eat and therefore developing something like Soylent, which is a pretty tasteless, as far as I'm told, nutritional supplement. So that means that they can stay at their computers for longer and not eat.
Yeah, it's horrible. I mean, that's like complete antithesis of what I do now. And when I was working in the industry, I'm not a coder. I'm not an artist. I'm actually like a designer. So I would come up with concepts for games and then sort of shepherd them through the production process way into coding. They were intense, and like, it was hard to pull them away from the computer. So I guess one part of my brain understands the need. The dietitian part of me is like, that's completely disconnecting all of your hunger and fullness cues that I would encourage you to actually be totally connected to. And everyone has time in their life to sit down at a table and eat some food and nourish their body.
Yeah, it's wild to me, actually. You know, even actually in the darkest throes of anorexia, I've always liked food. And so it was just wild to me that anybody that didn't have an eating disorder would choose not to eat food.
You know, it's a completely strange creation that, and it's almost like it previews like the Matrix, you know, where they eat like this sort of gruel that is full of all the amino acids that they need, but it tastes horrible. But that's what they eat now, because that's what they eat. And it's just, I don't want to evolve to that. I want to enjoy my food. And I think most other people do too.
Okay, so you mentioned that you focus, or you've done a lot of reading work around health at every size and intuitive eating. So I'd love to talk first of all about health at every size. I talk to people about eating disorders all day long. So I talk to people about health at every size quite a lot as well. And I still feel that sometimes it's just not very clear what health at every size is actually standing for. I get different messages from people. So I'd be interested in your view on it.
No, that's a great question. And I think it's, I believe it or not, I find the exact same thing. And I think people understand intuitive eating pretty well. I think people see the benefit both, you know, personally, or clinicians see that with their clients, they see the benefit of intuitive eating. But some people have a much harder time wrapping their head around health at every size. I'm not really quite sure why. So for me, health at every size, first off, starts with weight inclusivity. And what I mean by that is, in my practice, I don't judge anybody that comes in, and not, you know, any body, right? Not just the person, but any body. So someone could be 300 pounds, someone could be 85 pounds, and I'm not going to judge their health. I am going to get to know them. I'm going to learn about their behaviors, and I'm going to make my office inclusive to every type of body that comes in this room. And that even means disabled bodies, abled bodies. And there's this, the reason to me that is like the starting off point is because it frames, for me as a clinician, it frames my work in a very non-judgmental, I'm going to learn from you mindset, which is very, very liberating for me, because that means I get to the client is going to show me all of things that they are going to show me, because they're going to trust me and not see it as, oh, this person just sees, you know, me as a thin body or as a fat body, and that's the only thing they're going to work on. So that's the first thing for me with health at every size. The next thing is really looking at creating a space for everyone to be advocates for their own health, and that health is, on some level, it's a choice, and we don't have to force anyone to, you know, someone's in a larger body to, you know, change if they don't want to. And it's their personal choice that they get to engage in, but also that no matter what the size of their body, that they can be healthy and that they can achieve health however they define it. And so it's really, instead of pathologizing bodies, it's embracing bodies. So that, to me, that's the core of health at every size that I try to bring into my practice.
So from people that I've spoken to, and actually I recently spoke to a dietitian that I asked, what do you think about health at every size? And she said, well, I don't agree with health at every size, and which shocked me, I have to admit. But I think when she was saying why she didn't agree with it, that it was because she was thinking that health at every size meant that somebody could present in a larger body and that is always considered healthy. Well, that's not really what it's saying. It's just saying look for the health problem rather than assume that the larger body is the health problem. Correct?
Yes. And I think I would even take it a step further to say that the person who comes in a larger body is they actually can achieve health, right? Again, whatever that's defined as, in their body yes. as it is. It doesn't mean that we need to change their body to help them achieve their version of health.
Yes.
So, you know, it's interesting because that what the dietitian you spoke with is verbalizing is often the same thing that I get also from other people. And for some reason, people want to take it to the extremes, right? Like, oh no, that person who's, you know, who I see on TV who can't get out of bed and they're stuck in their house and they need to, I'm like, really? Are we going to like, that's the example that you think we need to use for health at every size? I mean, that person's isolated, that person's struggling. I mean, let's get away from their body and look at all those things before we pathologize just them by looking at them because, you know, they're at this extreme.
Yeah, and assuming that getting them to lose weight will suddenly solve all of their problems.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And this is where I think it's a helpful conversation, certainly for me, because I do think that a lot of people jump to that extreme example when they think about health at every size and really don't understand that it's saying that it's just you can be in a larger body and incredibly healthy. You can be
yes.
in a skinny body and incredibly unhealthy or healthy.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
It's just taking that out of the equation and actually looking at the person's symptoms and the conditions and taking the body weight out of the equation as a default, I think.
No, exactly. And I think the other sort of nuance within health at every size that at least speaks to me is how is the stigma part of being in a larger body plays into our health and how we see health. And understanding that, you know, weight is not just one issue, but it intersects with, you know, gender, it intersects with class, it intersects with, you know, all these other parts of society. So in essence, to me, health at every size not just becomes a philosophy, but it becomes almost like a social justice movement. And to me, that really resonates because, you know, that's just a personal background that resonates with me, that I really enjoy.
It's a lot more helpful, I think. It's just actually ultimately a lot more helpful for people that are not happy with the way that they are eating or with the way that they feel around eating X, Y, Z. It's just actually very helpful to take the way that they feel about weight and take weight focus out of the equation.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a tough, it's a big challenge because that is not the norm in our society. But you're right. That's where a lot of healing can truly happen is when we look at it from a weight neutral approach.
And so can you talk to me a little bit more about a weight neutral approach for anyone that's listening?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean?
Right. What that means is in my work, let's say binge eating disorder. A client comes in with binge eating disorder and they are in a larger body. And my goal as a weight neutral sort of approach is to get to the bottom of the behaviors without focusing on the weight or trying to change the number on the scale. So that means in all of our discussions, not necessarily saying it's actually not saying at all that let's get you to lose weight. And then we'll work on the binge eating problem will go away as we guide you through this weight loss program. So instead, what it's saying is let's normalize all foods. Let's try and create, let's try and create a non-judgmental space about our body and about our food and let's really get to the heart of what's going on with the binges. And that way we can look at the big picture instead of just the number on the scale.
It just, it really interests me how much judgment there is around binge eating. I imagine that it's difficult for somebody that's working with you straight from the beginning to be able to be very open about binge eating without feeling shame or embarrassment or any of those feelings. And it's really interesting to me because that's completely cultural, right? That's just completely because we've been given the message this behavior is bad.
Right. No, it's exactly true. And the what's interesting is I see that in almost all of my binge eating disorder clients, no matter what size body they come in. Because, you know, I have clients that have binge eating disorder that are not in larger bodies, that are in, you know, more average size bodies. And there's still that shame because we have, again, we put so much judgment on the food we eat, not just our bodies, but the food we eat. So if you are out with friends and you don't order the healthiest thing on the menu, someone's going to say, hey, why are you, you know, should you be eating that? Or don't you know that that has gluten in it? Or geez, there's a lot of cheese in that. Are you sure you want to eat that? Or so many comments, or the comments that, oh, I've been so bad today, when it comes to food. So you're right. Society, we've sort of made it very normal for us to be very judgmental about the types of food we eat. And that becomes almost like religious dogma. So yes, there's a lot of shame involved and there's a lot of hiding of behaviors also.
Yeah. And I've had anorexia. I have not had binge eating disorder, but in my anorexia recovery, I went through what I term as recovery binges. I didn't know they were those at the time. I thought that I, you know, just morphed into another eating disorder, which wasn't true. And I believe that recovery binges are the body's response to a state of starvation. It's natural to want to eat a lot of food in order to recover. But I still, even incredibly underweight, and felt enormous amounts of shame around that. And it was only a long time later when I sort of did some research, did some thinking, worked with other people with eating disorders, anorexia, and realized this is a normal part of the human body's response to starvation. And then I was able to reframe that binge eating that I went through. But I'm just saying that even for somebody drastically overweight that's desperately trying to put on weight, the enormity of the shame that I had around binge eating was incredible. And I couldn't talk to anyone about it because I was so ashamed.
And that's so interesting because I see that also in the treatment centers when binge eating disorder clients are in the same milieu as other bulimic clients anorexic.
I have to stop because this blows my mind that in a treatment center everybody's thrown into the same unit. It really blows my mind.
Like, yeah.
Wow.
I want to hear about why. I want to hear your opinion.
Just for the record, he did ask. Brace yourselves. Because from myself, anorexia, from a person with a restrictive eating disorder's point of view, it would give me the impression that binge eating disorder and anorexia were all on the same spectrum, and that if I went over my meal plan, I'm developing binge eating disorder, when really I'm not. If I want to eat a lot of food, which many of us want to do in anorexia recovery, we're just too ashamed to admit it, that is just a natural response to starvation, and it is not binge eating disorder. And so I think if you put people in the same unit, and they are completely different illnesses, it's just mixed signals to everybody involved, and you've got a lot of very vulnerable and sensitive people in those places. It's just not healthy. You could probably tell that this is a tight issue for me. I have quite a few.
No, and I respect that. Seeing it firsthand, I see it also from the client who has binge eating disorder, because oftentimes treatment is so weight restorative focused that for that client, they oftentimes have trouble saying, what they're really struggling with, mm-hmm. because everyone is getting praise for completing their full meal. They're struggling to, you know, just try and have a sensible, you know, portion for them without feeling triggered to binge. Yeah. And it's like a completely different reinforcement. I do see some benefit, and the benefit I see, and this could be like also like an intermittent type thing. I think that there's a lot of learning that can happen between those clients, mm-hmm. With binge eating disorder and anorexia. And what I mean by that is there's this healing about understanding that the weight stigma part of it, you know, the shame that someone feels in a larger body because of, you know, how society treats them, but also, you know, the anorexic and who's underweight is also feeling stigmatized because, you know, of society sort of saying, well, why don't you just eat a sandwich or something horrible like that? So there's some mutual experiences with body shame that I think could be really healing when people are together in the right setting. Mm-hmm. But I think it takes the treatment center like really knowing both, really being comfortable both, and really being able to facilitate those very difficult conversations.
Yeah, and I think the right setting for that might just be some kind of group therapy chat or anything. But I don't think it's mealtime, because they're very distinctly different illnesses. And I think what really upsets me is them being all shoved together. Of course, you know, a person with binge eating disorder is dealing with a completely different behavioral response to food and conditions around food than a person with anorexia. And so it must be incredibly hard for a person with binge eating disorder to work on what they need to work on as an individual when they're in a room full of people with anorexia who are all working on trying to eat more.
Right. Yeah, it's very, very complex. Absolutely.
It is wild to me, though, that I wish that they, you know, they're all eating disorders, but there was a greater distinction, and that more, I think like more respect is the word that I want to say is given to binge eating disorder and the difference between binge eating disorder and anorexia. And I think the reason that I'm so hot on this is because as a recovery coach, I'd say over 90% of the adults whom I work with have been to a treatment center. Some of them have been much more than once. They've been two or three times. These are all people with anorexia, but a lot of the time they are scared that they are going to overnight develop binge eating disorder if they go a serving over their meal plan. And that's been, I think, drummed in in a treatment center where they've had to measure everything out. And then I have to work with, you're hungry, I know that you're hungry, and actually encourage them to eat to hunger rather than just eat and stop where the meal plan says. And that's restriction. If you're that hungry and you stop where the meal plan says and you wanted to eat more, that's still restriction. And so it's, you know, a lot of these things have been ingrained in them from treatment centers that have said, whoa, you know, like, don't go over because that would be a binge. It's like,
yeah. And what I hear also in sort of your experience too is how really binge eating disorder is just so misunderstood.
Yeah.
And that goes to the fact that I think even still today, I think there's a lot of treatment for binge eating disorder that is focused on weight loss. And it's not focused on, I mean, it's focused on the behaviors also, but it's also a veiled weight loss program on some level. And I think until people really begin to understand binge eating disorder, that's when, you know, we'll get a lot more understanding about how to organize our treatment centers in a really effective way.
Yeah. And so let's go back. Let's move me away from treatment centers so I don't get too hot into the collar about it. But let's go back to a weight neutral approach. Okay. So
yeah,
I imagine, and this is just me completely projecting, that you have quite a few new clients come through your door who, when you say, what are your recovery goals, they say weight loss.
it's not even the eating disorder clients. I have, you know, I see what I would call chronic dieters whose goal is basically they know a little bit about intuitive eating. Cause I also make, whenever someone calls me to make an appointment, I'm very clear about how I practice. I don't hide it. There's no bait and switch with me. I am authentic in who I am and the way I work. So people know a little bit about me before they come in, but it is common for a client to say, I understand all this. I understand intuitive eating. I understand it's health at every size, but I still want to lose weight. And for me, that conversation is it's a very powerful conversation when it takes sort of multiple sessions to really work on. So what I do first is really just sort of to say, listen, how would you feel if we can just take the weight loss part of it and just move it to the side for a second? And let's look at your recovery goals, right? Let's look at, you know, developing this intuitive eating practice. Let's just work on that right now, or let's work on getting you to manage some of the binge eating, and let's just look at that first. And as you build some trust in me, let's bring that weight discussion back in, because in the end, it comes down to the relationship that I can build with my clients, and it's the rapport that we can build, and I'm not going to get very far in a first session with someone sort of challenging that. In the end, I always meet someone where they're at. I always sort of say, listen, I'm going to work, you know, I'll meet you where you're at. And I'm always going to ask you about it. I'm always going to sort of respectfully challenge it. That's my job as the dietitian. And, you know, we're going to find a middle ground that's going to work for both of us. And, you know, some people I can sort of bring over to sort of the weight neutral. And some people are like, no, I really need to focus on this weight loss. And sometimes they find a different dietitian, and I respect that completely. There's, there's a lot of different ways to sort of come at it. But it is a very, it's not a difficult conversation. It's a very challenging one. And it takes some time to sort of really answer it well and help the client feel comfortable enough to come on board with a weight neutral approach.
A lot of it, I guess, is around, like you mentioned, is building people's trust in you in the first point, so that, you know, sort of slowly to start with, but then hopefully as that trust gets built, they're going to be, well, they'll see and they'll feel the changes.
Exactly.
So do you, this is, I think, is a complicated one. Do you have people that come in that may have a goal of losing weight that are not eating enough food?
Ooh, good question. Yes. I have worked with, not a lot, but I've worked with some clients who are in larger bodies, who have been dieting their entire lives, and some had binge eating disorder, some didn't, but because of just the chronic cycle of dieting, their body and metabolism is so slow that even the, you know, reduced portions that they're used to eating, they would still not be able to lose weight or even sometimes gain weight. Mm-hmm. So I do see that. And that's a really it's a hard moment for the client, you know, because first of all, again, that takes some time also. I think the stereotypical dietitian, right? Or the, you know, what some people might have in their head as a dietitian, might not believe someone's like food recall, right? If it says, oh, I just had this little amount of food and I'm really doing it, but I don't know what's happening. Yeah. I think in the past, there's probably a lot of dietitians who'd be like, you're just lying to me. Yeah. You know, why can't you just tell me the truth? And again, this is why I love Health at Every Size and being so non-judgmental is, you know, I don't come at it from that angle. I try and make this space as safe as possible so that even if someone is, all they ate was Twinkies for the week, that they could come in and tell me and be honest, and they're not going to feel judged, just as the person who come in might say, all I ate was salads and I still didn't meet this personal goal of trying to lose weight. And they know that I'm going to not judge them for either of those extremes. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, it does. And the reason I asked the question actually is because I know somebody who went through that and was eating really, I mean, gosh, so much, a really low amount of food, and nobody would believe him that he wasn't eating that much. And I do think that, I think it's another one of those things that's actually more common than maybe it's assumed, because people look at somebody in a larger body and just assume that they need to eat less. And that's not always the case.
Exactly. And that's, you know, there was, I think it came out probably a couple years now, but a study that looked at at one season's contestants of The Biggest Loser, and they followed them, you know, 6 years after, and they showed just how metabolically slow their bodies were even after 6 years, and that they were eating, you know, very small amounts of food, exercising as much as they possibly could, and they were still gaining weight. And what really broke my heart was it was like a New York Times article, and they asked the supervising doctor who works on The Biggest Loser to make a comment, and his comment was, well, maybe they're just not working hard enough. And to me, that is the exact epitome of the stigmatization of people in larger bodies by healthcare providers. They're just not working hard enough. And when they're working so hard, they're working so, you know, they're trying the best that they can, and nothing's wrong with them. Their body is working actually the exact way it's supposed to. Their body's functioning perfectly. It's just because of the damage that this, you know, show has done, or chronic dieting has done to their body, that this is where their body is settled. If they were my client, I would plant the seed for body acceptance. I'm sort of moving away from the word body positive, for a lot of different reasons. But I would start with body acceptance. That let's just accept the body that you have today. And let's start doing some balanced self-care behaviors around food and exercise that support that acceptance and that nurture your body and that are not punitive, that are not, you know, to meet a certain specific calorie goal. Let's start to plant some seeds of body acceptance, which will lead to, again, a healthier relationship with food and your body.
The next question I asked Aaron was what he would say to anybody listening who has binge eating disorder. And his answer actually really fascinated me. Here's Aaron.
I don't like the word recovery for binge eating disorder. I like the word advocacy. Mm-hmm. I love it when clients have moved through enough process, gotten enough treatment to where they're now advocates for themselves, where they're able to say to their doctor, you know, I'm seeing a dietitian, I'm seeing a therapist, I have an eating disorder. If we could just talk about all the things that I need to address in this office, but not make weight an issue. I'm working on those things with these people. And that's a really hard thing to say to a doctor. But to me, that's a sign of someone who is so far into their recovery that they are now an advocate for their own health and be able to stand up for the boundary for their recovery.
It's probably not helped that they have to really not just be an advocate, but a very strong and determined advocate at that.
Exactly. You know. Because in their history, for many of them, they didn't want to be seen at all.
Yeah.
you know, they just, because of the shame that they felt about their bodies, they just wanted to almost hide from everyone and everything. So to stand up, especially in an intimidating place like a doctor's office, is a huge challenge. But to me, it shows so much empowerment and embodiment.
With that, I think if more people can be advocates for themselves, and I think that will be one of the things that will change the way that doctors treat people in larger bodies as well. I'd like to think.
I hope so.
I'd like to think it would come from the medical industry, but I'm very skeptical about that. I think it will come from the patients.
And, you know, I think it's going to have to come from a lot of different directions. You know, I think the hard part is, you know, with this, the way we frame bodies, like by saying there's a war on obesity, it's I think it sets all of us up for thinking that way, that, you know, we're at war against these bodies, which is horrible. I mean, no one's at war against my body, and I don't want to think that.
I have a question about back to the weight neutral approach. Because of all of the influences that a person has on them, it for any person, it's very difficult actually to think sometimes outside of the very immediate physical body reaction that we have, you know, because everything comes down to weight, it seems, in our culture right now. It can be very difficult to even find what the underlying intentions or behaviors are. So if you're starting a weight neutral approach with somebody, I mean, how often just when you start that process, do they just draw blanks about what they're thinking or feeling around food if it's not to do with weight?
That's a great question. And what I find is that I'm going to make it very general. I think a lot of times people really, if they are given the space to really build some introspection in a safe, without judgment, I think a lot of people actually do know what's going on with food. And they sort of see, you know, it's just saying it out loud that is the challenge, right? That, you know, before I was a dietitian, I struggled with food, and I used to eat out of anger. That was my anger management tool, is I would get angry and I would binge. And I knew that in the moment, and I knew it after the moment, and I know it now. I didn't have any of the tools necessary to treat it then or to manage it then. And if I was probably given the safe space to admit it, I probably could have admitted it to someone, but because there was so much shame in hiding it, there was no way I could have told anyone. Mm-hmm. But no, I think people sort of really know what's going on some level. And it's the hard part is being able to say it out loud to someone, mm-hmm. to be actually like, put a label on it, to name it, to speak its name, to whatever we need to do, but to actually express it to another person to get help. That's the vulnerable part, and that's where most people sort of close off.
Yeah, and that's fascinating. And do you find that with sort of your own experience and your understanding of binge eating disorder or anything else, that you feel that you're more able to help them draw that out?
I think so. I think that, well, one, I am in a larger body myself, and I think that helps and hinders. It depends on the client, but I come at it from a very, like I said before, authentic and real position that I've also struggled in some of these areas. I know what it's like to have a very unsafe relationship with food, but I also know what it's like to sort of have a very healthy relationship with food and a very safe relationship with food. So, you know, I tend to not bring up my own personal experiences unless I sort of need to, but because I've done podcasts, because I am open about talking about it, people do find out maybe even before they come to me, and maybe that's why they're drawn to me, mm-hmm. On some level.
It interests me because, you know, again, with a very different eating disorder, anorexia, but sometimes even the things that we can articulate aren't even close to what's actually going on. We just say them because they sound like the most cognitively understandable version of what's going on in our heads. So for example, a person with anorexia might say to me, you know, I don't want to eat, I'm scared to eat. And a lot of the time when we explore that, they're actually scared to eat because they're scared of how hungry they are. But the initial response to that might be like, oh, doesn't want to eat, you know, not hungry, scared of food. And really it's nothing to do with that. It's just actually being terrified of the amount of hunger that we feel, and that if we start eating, we'll never stop. So what I'm getting at is the expression or verbalization when asked about the behavior can often be misrepresentative of what's actually going on.
Sure.
And then I think sometimes the value can be helping even, you know, the person themselves understand that, oh, you don't want to eat because you're scared that you will keep eating, you know, and then we can work with that, you know. It's okay to keep eating in anorexia.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think that comes with both personal experience, but also just experience as a clinician. You know, those are sort of the chops you learn in the trade, so to speak.
Yeah. And Aaron, what are the parts about your job that just make you jump out of bed every morning and come home at the end of the day happy?
That's the best question I've ever had. Really, if you would have asked me 10 years ago when I started my schooling to be a dietitian, I would have said I will never work with eating disorders in my entire life. And I thought that it was the last thing I wanted to do, that it's too hard, it's too difficult. And here I am. Here I am in this field, and I love every minute of it. I really do. I'm so thankful that I get to go to work either in my private practice or at Center for Discovery. And I think what gets me out of bed every day is that I become a part of people's healing. And I don't take that for granted. I think that is an incredibly profound gift that people let me into their lives and trust me enough in their healing process. And, you know, that's when someone is able to heal, it makes my heart sing, and I get to, you know, just feel so much pride in that person for doing the work that they need to do and allowing me to be a part of that process. It is an incredibly difficult job. There are some days where I'm, for lack of a better word, just could feel very hopeless, and I'm not making a difference, but those days are few and far between, and I have my own support system in place to help me process those feelings. And when those come, I just know that I need to work through some stuff, but it's rare. And I know that it's so much brighter on the other side when people can truly heal.
That's wonderful. Aaron, if people are listening to this and want to learn more about you, where can they find you?
Yeah. So I'm on all different sorts of social media. I am on Facebook. If you just search Aaron Flores RD, you'll find me. I'm on Instagram at Aaron Flores RDN. And my website is www.bvmrd.com. And lastly, I host another podcast with a fellow dietitian, Glennis Oyston, and that's called Dietitians Unplugged.
Thank you to Aaron Flores for taking the time out to talk to me today. I have linked to in the show notes all of the things that he mentioned there. And definitely check out his podcast as well. It's called Dietitians Unplugged. So yeah, check Aaron out. And it's so wonderful to yet again find another dietitian that's really on board with non-weight focus and health at every size. And I think that it's, like we discussed, it's kind of misunderstood. Like, ultimately, I think health at every size is saying non-discrimination, no size discrimination here. Treat a person for their symptoms. And that's wonderful. I don't really understand why anybody would not think that's a good idea. But anyway, I asked Aaron after we'd spoken about, what were the difficulties of being a dietitian that does support health at every size? And because I imagine that going into that profession, there's sort of a mainstream approach, and then one at some point has to decide to swim upstream and swim against it. And he did use that example. He says it is rather like swimming against the tide, but it's very worth it. I hope that more people start to turn around and swim against the tide. And if enough of us do, then maybe we'll turn the tide and stop this fat phobic society and approach to health that we seem to have got ourselves into quite a mess with. And thank you for listening today. Hey, if you are struggling with an eating disorder, you're not on your own. There's so many resources out there. We have a community for adults recovering from restrictive eating disorders. We have a Slack group community where it's just full of adults over 25s that are supporting one another furiously in eating more and weight restoring and resting and not exercising and all of the things that come alongside restrictive eating disorders. And if you have, if you're struggling from binge eating disorder as well, then you might be interested in a new text peer support service that ADRA, that's Active Eating Disorder Recovery for Adults, the company that I have founded, is offering. And that's text support for eating disorders such as binge eating disorder, which the reason that we came up with that is because often the times that you need support are not times that you can schedule in with your dietitian or your therapist or somebody else like that. Sometimes the times that you need support are midnight on a Saturday night. And so wouldn't it be wonderful if you had somebody that you could text and say, hey, I'm struggling. Somebody that gets it, somebody that has been through it themselves. And that's what that's all about. And we have unlimited text support day and night for $30 a week. So if you're interested, I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you for listening. If you have any subjects, topics that you would like me to talk about, please don't hesitate to email me at info@tabithafarrar.com, because I want to know what you guys want to listen to. It's always good to hear from you as well. So maybe just drop me a note and say hi. You can also get hold of me on Twitter. My Twitter handle is @love_fat_. Thanks for listening, and until next time, cheerio.